Jason Pike was drowning in a cesspool in South Korea, at night and alone. He was a soldier against all odds, and he promises that his story that he is going to share today will inspire you against all odds. I am so thrilled to have Jason Pike with me today to share his story. Stay tuned.
Have you ever felt like giving up, quitting, throwing in the towel? Welcome to Never Ever Give Up Hope featuring Carol Graham. She's an author, health coach, and motivational speaker. Backed into a corner multiple times in her life, Carol shares with you stories on how she overcame some of the toughest obstacles a person can go through in life, but refused to give up hope. Rather than admit defeat, an opportunity was presented, and it involves each and every one of you. Carol will feature spectacular guests who will share their messages of hope, encouragement, and their inspiration to prove why life's adversities only make you stronger. And now, welcoming the host of the show, here's Carol Graham.
Lieutenant Colonel Jason Pike is a decorated combat veteran with multiple deployments who served 31 years in the U.S. Army, including 9 years in 5 countries overseas. I am so happy to welcome Jason today. Hi.
Hi, Carol. Thank you for getting me on the show. It's been a while.
The more I read about your book and look at your website, the more anxious I become to have you share your story with the audience today. So let's start with, of course, the title of your book, which I think is definitely an attention grabber, A Soldier Against All Odds. So we're going to talk about that. But first of all, can you give us some of your background story? Why did you join the Army? And were you planning on making a career of it, etc.? So take it away.
Yeah, I grew up in Georgia and South Carolina. So I'm from the South originally, the Southeast. And I joined the Army because I didn't think there was any other organization that could take me. I am a problem learner. I'm a disabled learner. I guarantee you most of your viewers out there can do better on any standardized test than me. And I think if you just taught me how to change a tire and you change a tire, you're going to have to work with me better, harder. And it's going to be more difficult to get things through my thick skull. That's just the way. And it was been professionally identified. It has been anecdotally identified. And probably I wouldn't have this book if I wasn't. You know what I mean? That's the reason I got the book. There's so many fiascos and failures in my life. But when I failed first grade, English and writing are my worst subjects, even though I'm a national best-selling author and writer.
All right. Just a minute. How does anybody fail first grade? Excuse me.
Okay. So, yeah, 1972, a letter was sent to my parents from from Emory. So they said, your son is just not getting his letters correctly done in the first grade. He's not ready for the second grade. They sent me to Emory University for more testing, and it was verified that, you know, I'm just not able to read like other folks. And I struggled with reading and writing. I still do to this day. So it was verified very young. It has also been verified even after college education. I eventually went on to get 2 masters and a bachelor's, but I felt that I could break it. In other words, I felt that I could somehow break through this disability. At that time, they thought it was dyslexia, but the term was not. It was thrown around. I don't know. Maybe I have Asperger's syndrome or something. I do know that things just take a little while with me. And once you start reading the book, I've got an entire chapter in the book called Where There's a Will, There's an A, as in the letter grade and the techniques I used to compensate around it. I can't break through this thing that I had, but I can work around it and develop other skills. But now, yeah, I was one of the kids where mom and dad said, well, let's just don't put any expectations on this child because He's just let him go. It's not, and they were probably more disappointed than me. I was only disappointed as a kid because I was leaving behind my first grade friends, and they're going to the second grade. I'm going back to the first. So that was considered failure, but I didn't, I just thought that's 2 years after that, I came down with osteomyelitis as a kid. It was a rare bone disease. And so therefore sporting is going away. So academics is going away. Sporting is going away, or I'm failing on that. And that was very painful. My knee nearly dissolved two different times. But it grew, it was able to be grown back. And so, there was not a whole lot of hope that there for me as parents looking at me, and that just so I was a well behaved kid. I tried my best in the academics and in sportings, but I'm only 5'8". I'm 120-150 pounds. I'm nothing of a specimen physically, and of course academics were out of the question. So they're. Therefore, my life, my parents were looking at me as, I might have a difficult life going forward.
So how did you cope with that as a young, very young man?
I had my immediate friends in the neighborhood, but when I went into my teenage years, I never said anything about a disability or that I was intellectually challenged or what have you. I stayed alone a good bit. I didn't. There was no bullies on me. I would stay away. I'd stay alone a good bit. Matter of fact, we've been talking about going to the 40th reunion. I didn't make a whole lot of friends. I had a few people in the agricultural world, the subject of agriculture that I, that I was in. But other than that, I pretty much stayed alone. But fishing outdoors, being with, I was sort of like one of the black sheep of the family. So I stayed outside a lot before the internet. I hunting and fishing and grew up in the country. So that became my entertainment world. Joining the military, a good question. There's two questions that you've got here. You've got a kid that is like not getting it intellectually or standardized testing it, what have you. SAT score, I guarantee I made really low on that. And so you have to, if you join the military, you have to show that you're physically, average or above average, or, and you have to pass a test. Now, with the physical part, I just lied to the military and I checked the block that I've never had any problems. So I said, I'm good. So they didn't find out about that until much later. And now with the intellectual pass. Now, this is a question. How did you pass the standardized test to get into the military? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really don't know. I did join the National Guard, which is a less than best reserve forces. It was a South Carolina National Guard. I joined at the age of 17 while I was a junior in high school because I had failed the first grade. So I was older. But I don't know how I passed that test. I really don't. And I don't, they may have just slipped, they could have just slipped me in. It was sort of a good old boy system. And they just said, well, okay. They just didn't tell me what you're in, just to have numbers. Because it wasn't going on to active duty service. It was reserve, weekend warriors, 2 weeks, one weekend a month, 2 weeks a year, drinking beer, shooting rifles and stuff. So it wasn't the real professional active duty. So that's kind of how I slid in. I kind of slimed my way in at the age of 17 through a reserve forces. And then from there, it's pretty much history. I stayed in for 31 years, and mostly it was active duty, which was full-time duty. I eventually transferred on to active.
Well, okay, that's your beginning. Now, I have a statement here that is on the back of your book, and it says, Jason's brutal honesty on how he survived while disclosing many sacred secrets is unique. So take us up to that point. Tell us how this, how this happened, and please share that story.
I had many, many fiascos and events that occurred, especially in my first 15 years in the military. Just graduating from basic training, which is the entry level to the military, was very difficult for me. I was one of the worst privates of the platoon. They sent me, they don't do this. The story I'm telling you, they don't do it. But they did it to me. And so I went to a criminal correctional facility. This is where really, really bad soldiers go to because they've done crime in the military. They sent me there in basic training, entry level. I was 17 years old. Not that I did anything criminal. It was because it was a motivational scared straight program. Let's see if we can break him. Let's, you know, basic training was hard enough, but they said, well, he's one of the worst ones. He's the weak link, and let's send him over there for 4 hours. Let him get all beaten up and go through obstacle courses and come out all bloodied up, and then return him back and see if he can survive. And also at the same time, I was a guinea pig for the platoon to improve their performance. But no, they were doing that to see if they could break me. It didn't break me. It made me, and it made me confident after I got out of basic training that I could do more things. But that was one of the many secrets that I could not even find anyone that could replicate that story in the military while I was in. But see, criminal correctional facility is for criminals. It's not for people. It was a drug deal with the sergeants. So they just said, let's send him over there and let him get beat up, make big rocks into small rocks, obstacle courses, and let him see a different form of hell to see if we can get him out. But I stayed in. I just never quit. And I eventually passed that basic training and went on to my 12th grade year of high school. I felt that when I was in the facility that I was going to stay there and I was going to have to do my time and miss the 12th grade. But they didn't tell me. They said, just go ahead and get out now. And I did. No, going through all that, going through pain, pain and failure were introduced to me very early, whether it be the pain of the knee, the osteomyelitis, the failure of the first grade. What probably sets me up better than most people, the only thing I would see is that I had pain and failure in early life. In other words, young, and where I just thought that's part of life. And that's how maybe it could have set me up a little differently to know that that happens. So I go into my senior year of high school, do the best I can. I graduate high school. I'm still a reserve soldier. I'm still a weekend warrior, 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year. I decide that I am going to be a leader in the military. I'm going to go to ROTC. Now, a good question is, you got all these bad grades. You can't go to, how did you get into college? And, I went into a junior college, it was a 2-year, they would take anybody lame, lazy, or crazy. So I just wore, I didn't even have to show them my high school scores.
Oh my word.
And so they just said, come on in. And I went from the very bottom, general math, everything was just kind of like a secondary high school in a way. And I built on from that and I transferred. I did well. I tried hard. I did well. And then I transferred into Clemson University, South Carolina. I didn't major in anything, not engineering. It was education. I majored in agriculture education. And I took it longer. The whole while I was going through ROTC and I was in the reserves. And so I had ROTC training, which I thought was really easy because I'd been through the enlisted ranks and basic training. And I had also doing reserves. I did reserve duty. So I had a lot of different training. I volunteered for every school that I could while I was in ROTC, such as airborne training and anything else. I even went to the Ranger, like a pre-Ranger school to learn about that. But I was self-confident now. I've graduated basic training.
That's great.
I'm in my 20s. I'm going to become an officer. I'm going to graduate if I keep on down this road. And I pretty much just built on the successes. Even every little thing was considered a notch on my belt to go up the ladder to attain a college education. After the college education, I went to the educational psychologist, to see if I broke through my learning disability. And they said, nope, you're not. You're still disabled.
Really?
It's like, yeah, because I wanted to see if I'd done something, that would break through it. And they said, nope, you're still way below the average on everything as far as processing ability, as far as putting these puzzles together and these letters together and all this stuff. So I said, wow, I can't believe it. I thought I'd break that. And I said, well, no. And so, I said, all right, whatever. And I just continued on. I stayed in the reserves as an officer. I got my commission, the second lieutenant in the National Guard. And civilian life was not working out for me very well. Military life was, you know, 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year, but I had had two different civilian jobs that I got fired from for various reasons. One job, when I got out of college as a reserve soldier, I went to, my civilian job was a government worker, and I went, I was a soil conservationist in the U.S. Department of Agriculture in South Carolina. I was goofing off in my government car, and I ran a stop sign, and I totaled the car, entirely totaled.
Oh, my word.
And I was in a county that I wasn't assigned to, and the boss took note of it, and he was happy that I was alive, and I was too. So I walked out of there without a scratch, but the entire car, I went, it broadsided me on the driver's side, and I wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and I flew over to the passenger side, and I walked out of the passenger door because the entire truck was just totally on that driver's side. And so if I was wearing a seatbelt, I would have been really hurt or dead. But and so I eventually got fired from there. I went on to another job. Keep in mind, I'd already had a bachelor's and a master's when I got fired. And I went on to another job, didn't get along with my supervisor there, and got fired from that job. And so, you know, here I am, got fired from two different civilian jobs, and, you know, I'm on unemployment now. I mean, I am on unemployment. The only income I had was from the reserves as a reserve soldier. Lo and behold, how things happen in life. The Army calls me up and says, hey, you forgot about your commitment to the Army. We gave you a scholarship, but you got to come back to the Army and fulfill your duty. I said, oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't forget about it. I was hoping they didn't find out about it is what it was. they said, no, you got to come back. And then they said, do you want to come into Special Forces? I said, what? I said, yeah, come into the Special Forces. I said, yeah, that's like one of the top-notch type of units to
go
to.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. And so I said, yeah, I'll do that. And he says, everything okay? I said, yeah, everything's fine in the civilian world. I didn't tell him I got fired from two different civilian jobs. So I said, yeah, everything's going good. And so I went straight in after being fired from two different jobs on unemployment, went straight in off of unemployment, went on to active duty in 1992 and went to the 10th Special Forces Group at Fort Devens, Massachusetts. And that was like going from a bottom level to high level. I mean,
wow,
I'm a reserve soldier who... going on to active duty with the Green Berets. Now, I was a support soldier with the Green Berets. Those are the snake eaters. But I was not a Green Beret. I was in support of them. But it doesn't matter. It is a prestigious place to go to, regardless. Especially coming from my background, where
of
I was
course.
Coming from. That's kind of how that notch hit. And that was... That's like this book of my life story is wickedly ups and downs along the way as I go through it.
Well, you went through a federal investigation on something you did not do, and we're going to talk about that. But first, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to talk about that and the message that you have for the audience about how to be resilient, because you are the poster boy of perseverance and resiliency. So we will be right back.
Carol Graham would like to show you the path from misery to miraculous triumph in her fast-paced memoir, Battered Hope. She relates her determination to succeed as someone who experienced one horrendous nightmare after another. Gang raped and left for dead, loss of a child, husband falsely imprisoned, and cancer. Nothing could break her tenacity or faith. No matter what you face, heartache, loss, suffering, or injustice, Carol will illustrate how she became a victor the same way you can. The secret is to never, ever give up hope. Order your copy at Amazon or batteredhope.blogspot.com.
With me today is Jason Pike, who is sharing his story. And as I mentioned just a moment ago, it is a story of perseverance, and I really appreciate what you have shared, but I know that what you are about to share is even more exciting. And that is, you went through a federal investigation on something you didn't do. You were thrown under the bus. You were gaslighted. I have written here, subversion and espionage against the U.S. government. That's kind of like a slap in the face, is it not?
That was the biggest slap in the face that I've ever had in my entire life. Okay. No, I've been to war. I've been, 31 years in the Army. I would rather go to war than go it under a federal, especially, the way I look at it is like, if you've got some people talking behind your back, that's hurtful. But what if it's somebody who's done a false federal investigation on you? That's not true. That is even more hurtful. I mean, that's with your job. I mean, if someone says, "Well, that's a fat girl. She's ugly. Nobody." No. What if they put it under official and you had to go under? That's what it was. I was thrown under the bus. And what it is I'll set the story up this way. Every 2 to 3 years in the military, even though I'm in the Army, at this time I was a senior person. I was a lieutenant colonel. I had a whole lot of awards and things under my belt. I'm going into South Korea. South Korea is a station that we go to, assignments that we go to. I've been there twice, though. Now this is my third time. I call this Third Time's a Charm. That's the title of the chapter. So I go in here. I found myself basically with people with power politics and agendas and things that I didn't get along with and I did not foresee. I feel that I'm pretty good looking down the road and planning out, but this is where I failed at pre-planning and understanding the power politics involved in this story. And in the military, there are politics. There's politics everywhere in life, but there was a guy there that had recently retired as a full colonel, and he became a contractor. In the book, we call him Ted Small. And he had a lot of influence, and he did not like me. He was a researcher. I was more of a leader and administrator. Our technical areas of life and history of life of how we evolved in the military are different. He had this one agenda of doing publications and papers of research material on public health in my competency area that I was over there in. And he didn't like me being the leader. In other words, he didn't like me being the administrator or the executive officer doing the administrative things of the Army. He wanted me down in the weeds doing a lot of the net detailed work, which I knew that so he had a lot of influence. He had a lot of power. So he had my supervisor pulled in to sort of ghostlight me, to gaslight me, or to throw me under the bus. There's two different things going on here, probably more than that in the chapter, but I'll talk about two different things here for your viewers out there. The first thing I knew when I walked in there and I saw the people and I saw I knew something was going to happen to me in this tour. I said, "Oh God, I've made a mistake." And I could feel it. I could feel it. We're animals in many ways. We can see and taste and we can kind of see how people act. And I knew that I was walking into something. I just didn't know what it was. So let's go to the first allegation was only a rumor, and this was really hurtful. We talked about the Saida, subversion and espionage against the U.S. government, but the first one before that, there was one before that, was just a rumor, and that was that I was a pedophile. My supervisor, female type, put out throughout the garrison and throughout the office that I am a pedophile. I did have a child that went to the Seoul Elementary School, and I would go visit the elementary school and eat lunch with her. I was a very playful father, things of that nature, but I was not a pedophile. That was really hurtful. Why would they do these things? Why would they be doing these things? Well, they have their own agenda of things, and if you're not in a clique, they can't fire me. They can't, but they can pass the trash. They can say, "Well, we don't like them. We'll get so much crazy, hideous things up to the chain of command that they'll want to move them." You know what I mean? So that was the first one. The first one was that you're a pedophile. That went away. And then within about a year later, I became a spy, a subversion and espionage against the U.S. government. That one was more official. That is where they brought in Criminal Investigation Division of the Army there at Yongsan Army Garrison and MI, Military Intelligence. And so when I went up and when I had the phone call to go to my commander to see CID and MI, I thought it was about pedophilia. But it wasn't. It was completely different. It was like, no, we feel that you have been selling secrets or passing on documents to foreign nationals outside the gate. And I said, no, my God. I said, no, I have not. He says, well, do you want to, you have the option to get an attorney if you want to do that. And I says, yes, I want an attorney. And I was very, very angry. And I knew who was behind it. It was the same person behind it. They were the same people behind the other thing of the pedophilia. So I'll give them credit where they didn't hit me one way. They tried to hit me another way. And so I go through an investigation. I have people following me around, monitoring my phones, weird phone calls, computer crashes, people following me around with these boom cameras if I go off post to see what they could get. And I knew things were going on behind the scenes, and I knew to be careful. I had my attorney. My attorney says, are you sure you haven't been doing anything? And because their job, someone has put a bug in the ear that you're possibly selling secrets. And I says, well, I haven't. He says, okay, well, if you haven't done anything, they ain't got nothing on you. And all they're going to be doing is following you around to see what they can get on you. And that's what they did. And it drove me into a high level of anxiety, high level of paranoia. I grew eyes on the back of my head. I was a swivel. I could not do my job. I could not do much of anything. You just feel bad that the organization doesn't like you so much, or they want you out. Something is, you know, you got to think, a lot of people think, what do you do to piss these people off? Well, they had their turf. They had their agenda of their work and their research and their papers or whatever they wanted to do. And I wasn't playing the game. So it was more on a professional basis, but it really hit me personal level, first with pedophilia, and then I became a spy. So in the government and in the military, people can play these games on you. They call it the takedown or the hit. And you could make up certain allegations and send them through various hotlines. It could be sexual harassment, sexual deviation. It could be racism. For me, it was pedophilia, and then official came the spy, the Saida, subversion espionage. So these things can be, you know, you can screw with people's lives by throwing things like that out there. Because there's, you know, we know that we have to go through drug and alcohol drug testing. That's through the, you know, but there's certain other things, certain behavioral things that you can do false allegations and really mess with people and their career. So that was the most hurtful and down time I've ever had in the military.
So what is your message to the audience, which is obvious that you are resilient and you persevere no matter what may happen? How can people relate in their lives your story and how it can help them?
Life is like ups and downs. We all know that. There's valleys and there's mountaintops, and we all want to be on the mountaintop, but to get to the mountaintop, you've got to go through the valleys. You've got to go through some of the dirt of life. And to inspire people, to have them understand that tomorrow is a different day. And you may be in this valley for a little while, but eventually you'll climb out of it. And also when you're in the valley, in the down parts of life, you can learn from that. And you learn not to do whatever it takes for your learning. You can learn from the failures and the fiascos of life. And I've had many, many of them in my life, all detailed out in this story.
Right.
So the sacred secrets are about the investigation. It's about being locked up in the criminal correctional facility. It is the sacred secrets that I never told anybody about, that I felt that could be a message of life and how I lived it to survive it and then live and thrive from that.
What kind of feedback have you had about your book?
I look at it in form of reviews. There's been over 270 reviews. The book, that first book, Soldier Against All Odds, has hit number one category, two different categories on Amazon, Army Memoirs and Veterans Military History. So it's done very well as far as sales and reviews and people feedback. And people really seem to want the resiliency stories. They want the never quit stories. There's just something there. I think maybe even after COVID hit, I think a lot of people are still, they just want, especially a lot of the young people want to hear these messages of that were, you know, failures and fiascos and events. And that's what makes that first book really, really juicy for folks to identify with. And it's written in a very plain spoken type of conversational style, just sitting outside the front porch and eating, and it's like a restaurant. So I have it in that style where you can have, I am the audio versions out there with my voice, as well as, you know, you can just do the reading or the Kindle. So that has really done very well.
So tell us about the awards you received.
I'm a decorated combat veteran with, I've got the Bronze Star that was from Afghanistan. That's the big one from the war. And then I've got another highest level, I've got a Legion of Merit. But I've got over 31 awards, jumped out of airplanes, got the Airborne Air Assault. I got the Expert Field Medical Badge. So I've got many, many awards. On the photograph there, there's a whole rack of them. And so that may look pretty to a civilian, but in the military, those mean a lot of things. That means you've been here and done that in many ways. So yes, I'm a decorated combat veteran.
And what are you doing now? You're writing another book, correct?
Yes. So now I'm writing a book on toxic leadership. And I am toxicity and what to do in a wicked workplace and the options you might have. And of course, I've been in some wicked workplaces, as we've described, but it's pretty well noted that a lot of your higher level people get to where they're at by, you know, being mean, kicking down and kissing up is what they call it. And there was just a study where it says 20% of CEOs are psychopaths.
Goodness, that's amazing. So, I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah. And so, and you know, at that time I didn't realize that I knew that there's some people you just need to stay your distance from, but, yes, so I've made a lot of contacts with my books, and a lot of people are wanting to come out, especially on this toxic leadership, toxic behavior in the workplace. And so we're going to do another storytelling style, have my stories in there, but also other people's stories to form various themes of, you know, that you're not alone. And these are some
good
of the options and things of that nature. Yeah.
And when is that due to come out?
We're looking at another 3 months for that to come out.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, this has been really interesting. Whenever I have someone on from the military, I can always know for a fact that it's going to be intriguing. And your story definitely has been intriguing. Also, I know that it will appeal to other people other than people who have been in the military, and that's what you've made quite clear. So in conclusion, is there any specific message that you would like to leave with the audience?
For folks in the military, especially, I'm looking at folks just showing up at the right place at the right time with the right attitude, even if you don't know anything. And I've been in your place if you don't know anything. I usually, what set me apart also was I showed up. I had a good attitude. I showed up at the right time. Show up a little earlier, because that's where you can build up some personal relationships. And at right time, right place, right attitude, maybe right. And so if you just do some very basic stuff, you'll be ahead of the, you might be better, you'll probably be better than 50% of everybody else out there. So that's my message there on that.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think we can all relate to that. So I thank you, Jason. This is definitely intriguing to listen to, and want to hear from you again when your next book is out. So let's make a connection at that point. And I thank you for being on Never Ever Give Up Hope.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Never Ever Give Up Hope, featuring Carol Graham. Did you know that most people succeed because they are determined to? Quitting was never an option. Carol loves your comments and will respond to each one. So please subscribe and review this podcast. A rating of 5 stars would be outstanding and appreciated. Remember, if you are still here, there is always hope.